You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hey builders, Jason and I have had a rough couple of weeks here. We've been doing a lot of traveling for work, and Jason's going out of town again here shortly. We've both been sick off and on. Anyway, rough few weeks, and we just haven't been able to get together to record the way we normally like to. So this week, we're going to do a little bit of a different thing here, a little bit of a best of episode. Jason and I have each picked a favorite pitch from the past of the show, and we thought we would replay it here for you and just make a few quick comments. Jason will introduce his episode here after we listen to mine, but I thought I would go back to my original pitch for the tower building game, which eventually became Saloon Tycoon. It was fun for me to go back and listen to that original idea and think through my original prototype. But I mean, apart from that, also just to kind of listen back to the old shows. This was episode 21 that this episode was a part of, this pitch was a part of. And, I just had a good time hearing it one more time, and I thought you guys might as well. So, check it out. Thanks a lot.
With lasers.
But even that, you've got that Easter Island game.
Yeah.
That basically is that game without the lasers.
That's true. That's right.
Though I would probably argue the game is more fun with the real lasers.
I have to admit, I would really like it if lasers shot out of the eyes of those Easter Island heads and then went into the ears, and that would be pretty cool.
The Maoris. That's what they're called.
The Maoris?
That's what they're called.
Their names is Maori?
I think it's Maori. It's M-A-O.
Maori. It's pronounced Maori.
You don't know that.
I do. M-A-O-R-I.
Then why'd you just call them statues? Why didn't you pimp it out with a real name?
No, I don't think that's what their name is. I mean, that you're thinking Maori people. Are they like the
Isn't that what they call the heads, too?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
We could Google it.
We won't. No. But some listener probably will.
Tell us we're wrong.
Or we'll get an email, like a comment, like we did on the website last week from Brian.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, who made fun of me. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting topic that, I don't know. Hadn't thought of that.
So, yeah.
Is it time to move on?
Sure.
Okay. What's next?
Practicing the pitch.
It's time for practicing the pitch. I'm going to pitch a game tonight. Is that okay?
I guess.
Too bad.
Hope it doesn't suck.
It's going to happen anyway. It's going to happen really pretty much any minute now. There's a piece of dust floating in the air that's distracting both of us.
It is.
All right. Anyway. This is a game I've been working on in little bits and fits and starts here for, I guess for a couple months. A while back, I prototyped it a while back, and actually I had tweeted a picture or two of it, but it wasn't really ready for me to talk about in detail because I was just kind of trying some things out. And I don't really have a name for it yet, so right now I'm just calling it the tower building game. Okay?
Clever.
It is. And we talked about names last time and how hard that is. It's very hard.
It's really difficult.
Yeah. The tower building game. The idea of this game is that you are a real estate developer of some kind, right? And you are trying to build a skyscraper, all right? To build that skyscraper, you need to build floors, right? And you need to put in utilities into that structure. You know, you need to put in you have to build it with structure, with concrete, you know, concrete and steel, and you need to wire it up for electricity, and you need to plumb it for water, and you need to put in heating and cooling so that your people can survive, you know, all that stuff. But also, being a real estate developer is expensive. It's going to cost you a lot of money. A major part of the game is getting into debt.
Sounds like America.
Yeah. So you have to borrow money from the bank in order to spend money to build your tower. And you're not going to really be able to make any money off that tower until it's all done, until people can start moving into it. Okay. Right now I have set up as a two-player game. It probably could be stretched to four players, but I kind of like the idea of keeping it a two-player game. I don't know. I mean, that's up for discussion, up for, you know, playtesting and to be determined. I think it could work really well as a two-player game, though.
Okay. Right?
So what you have here is you have a deck of cards, and it's the same deck that everybody draws from, right? Okay. And in that deck, you have a few different card types. I have some prototype cards here. What do I want? There it is. Okay. We have a few different card types. We have floor cards. A floor card is just that, a floor of your tower, right? Okay. Every card that we have here is some kind of cost. So it's going to, and the costs vary depending on the type of card that it is and what kind of benefits it might give you, what kind of money it's going to earn you in the end. But you have a floor tile or a floor card, and you stack those up in order to build your tower. You have roof cards. You need to top your tower off with a roof. And only if you have a roof on your tower are you going to be able to get points for that. Okay. Then we have bonus cards. Bonus cards give you multipliers to your score in the end, but they also cost more money to build, more to install.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have attack and defense cards. Attacks will cause your opponent to lose a floor. It's some kind of sabotage or some kind of accident or something that happened on the construction site. So if you can play an attack card on your opponent, it's going to make them have to remove their top floor from their building. Unless they have a defense card. The other option, if they don't want to lose that floor, they could instead spend money to mitigate those losses. Okay.
Okay.
Borrow more money from the bank, right? And then finally, we have defense cards. The other option is if they don't want to spend money, they can play a defense card if they have one in their hand that would, you know, either say, nope, that's canceled, that actually didn't happen, it was a mistake or it was an error, or they might be able to bounce it back to you, right? And I like that idea of being able to bounce it back to the previous person, because that whole take that idea is I want that to be a core part of the game.
And it makes you wonder about risking playing that attack card, knowing that they might be able to serve you back.
Right, exactly. Now, all those cards cost money with the exception of a defense card. Defense cards generally are free to play, unless it's some kind of really, really nasty defense that is going to do something bad to the guy who tried to attack you. Then it might cost a little bit,
okay,
but we'll see. So the idea is that at the start of the game, everybody starts with $0 in the bank. Okay. And we're going to have like a score tracker around the board. Right. And you have a little token that you place on there starting at zero, saying, this is how much money I have at any given time. We've all seen those kinds of things, right?
Yes.
But you start the game with zero money. Let's say I want to build a floor, and the floor I have here is going to cost me eight. Well, I don't know if that's 80, if that's 800, if that's 8,000. I don't know.
8 million. We'll just
call it eight units.
I like it.
Okay, 8 units. And then, so if I'm going to build that floor, I have to move my score tracker on that tracker board down to -8. Okay, and we identify negative or positive by flipping that tracking token over, you know?
That's a great idea. That's a really simple way to track that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So then next we want to put another floor, and that's going to cost me another 6. And then another floor, that's going to cost me another 5. And then I've got this bonus card. This bonus card here is going to give me a x2 to my total score. That's going to cost me 14, because holy cow, that's expensive to get that multiplier, but maybe it's worth it. And then in the end, I'm going to spend 6 to put a roof on this structure, okay? And that roof is going to cost me 6, but it's going to give me a value of 3, all right? So then I take, when I'm all done here, I take the total number of floors, which I think we said we had 4 floors.
Okay.
Okay, we have 4 floors times 2, because we have that bonus multiplier, times 2. So we have 8 floors times a point value of 3, which is, what did I say? That's 32? No, that's, I can do math. That's 22.
Okay.
22?
I don't know. You lost me at
24.
Math. 8 times
24. 3? Be 24 points.
8 times 3 is 24.
Yeah, yeah. Thank
you. Of
this,
I'm confident.
I'm doing good. So you get 24 points, right? So that's the idea. So you would go into a certain amount of debt to get that, but hopefully when you build that tower big enough and you score it out by putting a roof on it, you're going to make more money back than you spent.
Right.
Obviously, it would have cost you a lot more than 24 to actually install those floors. I need to figure out the numbers and the balancing on that and the scoring structure.
Right.
But so, that's the idea.
So, quick question. Do you disassemble the tower when you score your points?
Yeah, that's the idea. Starting your next turn, you tear down that tower, you start building the next one.
Okay. The only reason I was asking is because how else would you know what it was worth?
Yeah.
Now,
right.
I thought from the things you talked about before, maybe this has changed, but you have little things that you use.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to next.
Okay, yeah. let's do that.
This is what's going to make a difference. So, first of all, before I start with that, so this idea here is you're only getting points when you finished a tower, right? And so the taller your tower, the more points you're going to get for it.
Right.
But if you make a bunch of small towers, you're going to get to score them out more frequently. So you need to decide which way to approach that or try and balance those benefits,
and
right?
And I assume if the game ended and you had a big unfinished tower,
you don't get anything.
You're
going to
get hosed.
Yeah, because that means, you know, whatever market collapses or supplies run out or whatever. Right.
Right.
Right. So, okay. There's a worker placement aspect in this game, too, because in order to build these towers, you need to get resources. You need to get the structure, the concrete and steel that I mentioned. You need to get plumbing in there. You need to get heating and cooling in there. You need to get electricity in those buildings, okay? And so you need to get each of those resources from different vendors, okay? So we have a board out there, and the board is set up, let's see, right now I have it with...
Rob has left the mic.
Just turned around. They can hear me.
He left the room.
I have six spaces on this board, okay?
Okay.
Okay, because for this worker placement aspect, everybody starts the game with two workers.
Two workers.
Two workers. Okay.
I like it.
We have six spaces. We have red, blue, yellow, and gray. Okay. Red is heating and cooling. Blue is water. Yellow is electricity. And gray is structure.
Structure.
The concrete and steel, right? Then we have two more spaces that are the bank and the architect, okay? At the start of your turn, you have two workers you can place, all right? You take turns, and you can put up to two workers in one spot, so you can never have more than two workers in any one spot. So you could place both of your guys in one and prevent the other guy from putting anybody in there, right?
That'd be tricksy.
Or you can spread them out, right? Okay.
Right.
So for every guy you put at one of the vendors, red, blue, yellow, and gray, you're going to get one resource from that. And these are like little cylindrical wooden items.
They're like wooden cubes, except for they're wooden cylinders.
Yeah, I want them to be cylinders is what I'm thinking, right? If you put a guy in the architect, for every guy you have at the architect's office, you can draw another card from the deck to go into your hand.
Cool.
Okay. And right now I'm thinking a hand limit of 5 to 7 cards. I'm not really sure exactly.
How many would you start with?
I'm thinking you're starting with 3. But again, balancing needs to be done, right?
Right.
Okay. And then in order to actually build anything on your tower, you need to put a guy in the bank. The bank is where you're actually going to borrow the money to build that thing. And for every guy you put at the bank, that's one card that you can build on your tower, right?
Cool.
Okay. So, resources. Each card that you're going to put on your building has colored tokens or colored symbols or icons in each corner, okay? And each color corresponds with a resource. So you start out with a base, and this would be, so there's two boards for this game, right? There's your resource board, and then there's your construction site, okay? The construction site has just a generic foundation already printed on there with four colored resource spots, okay? In order to build your first floor, let's say your construction, your foundation piece that's already printed on the board, you need one blue, one red, one yellow, one black, or excuse me, gray.
Cool.
All right? And so you need to get one of each of those resources.
Like in the four corners?
In the four corners. Cool. Exactly, in the four corners, right. So you put one of those things down in each of the spots, and then you put a guy in the bank, and then you can build your first floor. Okay?
Makes sense.
Right. Now, putting those resources on those four corners it's just simple. There's no extra cost for doing that. That's part of the cost of building that floor, right? And you don't have to spend any money to actually get those resources from the vendors. What you're doing, the idea here is that you're when you're putting your guys at those different vendors' offices, you're you know, getting contracts with them, signing up for it, and then when you go to the bank to borrow money, that's when all the construction is actually done and everybody comes in and installs that stuff, which is why it's going to cost money from the bank. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So you put in a new floor, and now you have a new floor on top of the old one, on top of your foundation, that's raised up off the board by those tokens, by those cubes, those resource cylinders.
Right.
And you have a new floor with four new colored spots on it. In order to build the next floor on top of that, you got to get those four resources. Okay. The one time when that's different is when you're playing a bonus card. A bonus card is going to have all four corners are just going to be white circles. Okay. You can install a bonus card as a floor, but but you cannot build on top of it. You then have to spend more money to put a floor on top of that bonus card. Does that make sense? Okay.
Yep.
Right. So that a bonus card cannot be used as a floor. It can only be used in combination with a floor.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And so that's basically the idea. And you're going to get different benefits. Like, that some floors maybe won't give you any benefit at all. No bonus, but maybe, you'll have a floor that'll give you a +1 blue resource. So on your next turn, as long as that floor is exposed and as your top floor, you're going to get that one bonus for it. So that means every time you go to put a guy in the plumbing supply office, okay, for every one resource you're actually going to get two resources.
So you could actually milk that, correct? Like you could be like,
that's the idea.
I'm going to stay here for a few turns, get a bunch of water.
Right.
That way my plumbing stuff is all set.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can focus on the next one.
Right.
That's really smart.
Yeah. And so the idea is that if you have a whole lot of cards in your hand that you're like, oh man, I got like four good floors here that I want to install. But the one that's already out there gives me a really good benefit. Like another one of the benefits or bonuses you might get is an extra worker. So you would have three guys out there instead of just two to place the different resource places.
So then as soon as you put the next floor up, That worker goes away.
That worker goes away, and you're going to get the next benefit. So you might hold on to four floors in your hand while you're gathering resources so that you can go bam, 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 and install three floors all in one turn.
Right.
And just, like, shoot that thing up.
What do you think the percentage-wise, just guess, would be have a bonus on a floor?
I want to say that of the floor cards, okay, of the floor cards, I'm thinking that 75% of them would have some kind of a bonus. All right. That worker bonus might be 10% or something. You know, that's a really good, not real common one. But in terms of actual numbers of cards, my prototype deck was 100 cards. Mm-hmm. It's way too many cards. Took way too long to play.
I'd imagine.
We got bored with it. So I'm going to have to cut that deck down. I don't know if I'm going to do 50 cards or 70 cards or what.
I mean, just by what you described, 50 sounds like probably still more than enough.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Only because you're just going to be holding so many floors. Because, like, I guess my strategy for this game would be to do what you said, where it's like, all right, I got a floor that's going to give me a bunch of plumbing, get the plumbing. Now I got an extra worker, get a bunch of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would the workers be placed each turn?
Yeah, you would, just like we do in Stone Age, you take turns. Whoever goes first places their first worker, or two or three.
And you just go back and forth on that.
Right, yeah. You can only place in one space or one location at a time. So if you want to put all three guys, if you have three workers, well, let's just say you have your two workers. If you want to put both of your guys in one spot, you put them down, you're done. But if you only want to put one guy in one spot, you put that one guy down, then it goes to the next player.
So if you want to block someone, so you always have the chance to block someone.
You always have the chance to block somebody.
But that next turn, they have the chance to block you.
Right.
Because it's always going to go back and forth.
Right. And just because you put a guy there doesn't mean you have to do it. You know?
Of course. Yeah. It's just like Stone Age.
Right.
Right. I mean, the idea is like you're blocking people from getting to what they want.
Exactly.
What's nice is because it's a two-player game, again, you're going to get hosed next time if they... They're like, oh, Rob needs to go to the architect office. I don't think so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's the idea. And when we were trying it with Christina, we're playtesting it, it's kind of fun to see that tower grow. Then you literally have a tower standing up on your desktop.
Oh, I think that's one of the coolest things. It's very tactile, right?
That's what I like about it.
There's a lot of ways you could do this that wouldn't be like that, and the game doesn't sound that great. Like,
yeah.
But when you combine what I think sound like pretty cool rules... with a tower that goes up, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I was really worried about stability, about those things being wobbly or something. We were just using just flimsy index cards, you know, that are really thin and lightweight, and the resource pieces that we were using aren't real tall; they're real small pieces. And I mean, it was a little janky. But I think if we had shorter resource pieces, because it's not like you have to have like a, you know, 2 foot tall tower here. Just the idea of getting it raised up off the table is kind of fun. So if you put some, you know, a little bit lower profile pieces, and then you get a real sturdy, heavy standard, heavyweight into a playing card on that, I think it'd be super stable, super strong. And I wouldn't worry about it toppling over or, you know, you're not going to go blowing on the thing. But, you know, I think it could be fun.
You should have written in the rules. This is funny. You should have written in the rules that if you knock another player's tower over, they get 10 free units or something like that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you would
just
you
because
would,
why not? It'd right. be funny, right? I right. mean, it yeah. reminds me of Dread with the Jenga tower. Where yeah. if you knock it over accidentally, even mm-hmm. when you're not playing,
yeah.
you're dead.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
just how it works.
And you're right. And you would have to put that thing, kind of thing in there. When we were playing, we had our ceiling fan on, so it's not like it, I mean, the ceiling fan wasn't blowing it
right.
over or anything.
Right.
You know, it's not too fragile. It wasn't as fragile as I was afraid of.
Right, and that was like you said with janky index cards and stuff. You get real thick cards.
Yeah.
And the pieces that are meant for it.
Yeah.
Idea for a card that I think might be fun. Just uh-huh. just a thought.
Sure.
Have like a tax card
mm-hmm.
or like a zoning card or something to where like you can penalize, say, one unit for every floor they have on a non-finished structure. That might make people afraid to build the super tall structures.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got like 12 floors, right? And then you're like, and penalty.
Minus $1, one
unit.
Score
yeah.
unit. Yeah, right. For every, yeah. Okay, yeah. That, so, yeah, sure. I mean, that's kind of stuff. I would need a variety of different kinds of attacks.
Right, and then you need to take that.
Yeah. And now, one other thing that I was trying to, I was thinking about, I was mulling over my head, because, you know, I really like player choice, you know?
Yes.
I really want to give people the opportunity to make choices and make their own strategic decisions. So I was thinking, what if every floor card was both a floor and an attack, or a floor and a defense? So if you could be playing a card as an attack, but if you're playing as an attack, you're not going to be able to use it as a floor.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
playing as a defense, well, you're not going to be able to use it as a floor. I don't know. It's just something that came to mind a few days ago, and I was trying to think that over.
What's cool is that's dual purpose, right?
Yeah,
you've
yeah.
got two cards for the price of one. What's not as cool about that is that means you have to have a smaller deck even more so.
Yeah.
Because think about it. If you've got a floor mm-hmm. that's also duels is the other thing, right?
Yeah.
You're going to have so many cards. But if you have, say, a 50-card deck and 30 of those are tower pieces and 20 of those are attack defense cards.
Yeah.
Statistically, you could have more cards because the take that cards are easier to spend than the tower cards.
Yeah, you're right.
So there's a thought. I mean, there's an argument against, but I'm not saying it's a bad idea because player choice is always good.
Yeah.
Giving your player choices, as long as it's not going to make, analysis paralysis, right?
Yeah.
Which I think in a game like that if you get analysis paralysis in that game, you shouldn't be playing games.
Yeah. Yeah, so then the game end scenario, okay? Right now I'm thinking the game ends when the deck runs out, okay? But the other option for that is the game ends when the first person reaches $1 million.
Right.
Or, you know, when you hit a certain score threshold.
50 units or something like that, or 100
yeah,
units.
100
yeah.
units, something like that, yeah. So that's those are the two things that would need to be investigated and balanced into. So, yeah, obviously you could also play it 4-player, and maybe that would be better because that would further limit your options on the actual resource board and make it a little tougher, a little more competitive. So maybe it would be good as a 4-player game, too. I've only been thinking about it so far as a 2-player game, but, you know, maybe 4 is a good idea. I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just not sure about, again, deck size.
Right, and the other thing that would be rough with 4 players is you'd probably have to scale up the places for the worker placement to be 3 on a spot.
You think so?
Well, I just think you've got 4 players now.
Mm-hmm.
You can only have 2 in a spot. You have 8 spots, right?
Yeah.
Which means every
yeah,
spot
six
has
spots.
To get 2, 4, 2, 4, 6. Yeah, but 2 can go in each. So you have
12
spots.
Yeah, okay.
So you have 8. Units that can be spent, 8 workers that can be placed,
mm-hmm.
and 12 places to place them. So I guess there still is
yeah.
4 extra. It just really sucks to be the last player because you're going to consistently not get what you need. So if
yeah.
you're doing really well, it allows everyone to constantly screw you. And to me, that goes from take that to not fun really quick.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Another idea for like, you were talking about floor bonuses. It might be cool to have one where, if on your turn you get a red and a blue, you
mm-hmm.
get a free gray. So like it kind of determines where you have to play. So the other person always has the chance to block you
mm-hmm.
because you can't put in 2 spots at once.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be cool about that is that would force them to say, okay, I'm going to block red even though I don't need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Alternatively, mm-hmm. you could have a bonus floor that allows, not a bonus floor, but a floor with a bonus that allows you to place both your people in different spots on your first turn. rather than, then you would basically be unblockable.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. This is the type of stuff that I think of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, these are good thoughts. These are good thoughts. Obviously, some of the cards would have wild spots. You know, so you wouldn't. You could have a resource of any color in that section of the card. You know, to build the next thing up.
Right.
To give you some more options there. And those the wild floors are a lot more exciting. Right.
They're wild.
Hey, they're wild. Yeah. So that's the idea.
Have you given any thought to the idea that you might score points based on the components that you used? For instance, instead of a roof just saying a multiplier of 3, it might say, and 1 unit per red that you have in your tower.
Oh, that's a good thought.
So basically, you would be like, I've got a lot of cards that I've read, or I have a wild card,
uh-huh.
and I could put 4 of whatever I wanted in there.
Yeah.
I think I shall put in 4 reds.
Okay, that's a good idea.
And then play this roof card.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that idea a lot because, and that would help with scoring also.
Yeah, I mean, automatically boost up your scoring. If you just said, and 1 point for every blue cube used on this.
Yeah, you know, and I thought of that initially. You get points for every resource, but I didn't want to have everybody, you know, I like the idea of just tearing it down and then counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, 2 times, 3 times, 4, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I liked about just counting cards. And I didn't want everybody to have to count out every 1, 2, 3 of all 4 colors, you know?
Right.
But if you're just doing it of 1 resource color, that might be a really good option.
That would be easy to think about when you're building it, right?
Yeah.
I got a good roof card. I'm going to focus on red.
Mm-hmm.
Something else I'd be curious about would be components. How many would you have, and would it be possible to hoard?
Mm-hmm. You'd have to have some kind of a limit on the number that you can have held in reserve, right? You'd have to say you can have more than, you know, 12 resources in your reserve.
Total,
you know, at any given time before you have to build them. Or maybe you'd say 26. I don't know.
Right.
I wouldn't want somebody to be able to just get everything off the board and keep it and screw everybody else from being able to do anything. So you got to have some kind of limit on that.
Right.
And then how many of each of those resource pieces do you need? I think we were working, because I just pulled the components out of that Pompeii game that we have. And there were something like, I think there were like 25 or 30 of each of those in that game. And that was more than enough because we weren't building a tower all the way to the stop. You know, we were building one
right. Eight
or 10 cards high and then tearing it down and putting all those resources back.
But that could be a strategy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've got some wild cards. I'm going to focus on getting all the plumbing so that no one else has plumbing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there's going to have to be some kind of a limit to the number of resources you have in reserve at any time. And then, because you don't want to have to put 100 of each resource type, resource color in your game. That's silly.
Right. What I was thinking about was a game like Stone Age or even a Settlers or something where you're collecting resources. The difference is you're immediately spending them again.
Yeah.
With this, you're holding on to them because you're building a tower.
Right.
So
you're going to need more than you
have in
those
games.
And the game
kind of encourages hoarding a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because you're like, if I could get a lot of water right now, I'm going to get on it, you know, and then...
Yeah.
So. Hey, builders, Jason here. It's time now for practicing the pitch. So, I've got an old pitch for you here to listen to that I think is worth hearing once again. The pitch is from episode 94, and it's And Out Come the Wolves. This game, the reason I wanted to include this is for a couple reasons. First of all, it's a pitch I really enjoyed. It's a pitch I really liked. I thought had some potential. And I did some work on it and then kind of set it aside and then never picked it back up again. But it's the game that builders consistently ask me about. It's a game that I've been asked about more than I think most games that I've talked about on the show. Somehow it just really resonated with people. Originally, it talked about having a Hanabi mechanic, which you'll hear in the pitch, where you've got your cards facing out. And I tried that, and functionally, I just didn't feel like it worked as well as I had hoped it would. But that said, you know, I kind of wish that it did, because I still like the idea of the reveal. And if you haven't heard the pitch before, you'll understand when you hear it on this episode here. But I do think it's worth giving another listen to. I also feel like it's worth me, after listening to it again, putting some more effort into the game, looking maybe at my rules document that I have and everything out there, and then seeing about if it's worth trying to
to kind of revamp the game and maybe do an additional pitch for it with a newer version. Yeah, I just think that the game is probably worthwhile and is worth trying to do again. So enjoy the pitch, give us your feedback, and hopefully on a later show, I can give a new pitch with this and have it be tweaked and different and something that I want to pursue. All right, here it comes.
Games that are completely not ready for sale. Yeah, right, yeah. So
moving on. Yeah, to practicing the pitch.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to pitch a game this week.
It's time for that.
I'm super excited about this game.
Good.
You know, we on sometimes on the show, we admit we're not super duper excited about a game we're pitching. Mm-hmm. It's an idea. We want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to prototype. We're not going to make it. Well, this one, folks, that's the prototype right here.
Prototype before pitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
The rules are written. They're really ugly, and they're really hard to understand.
Basically, it's going to launch on Kickstarter in, like, 3 weeks.
It's actually already out there.
Oh, okay.
No. But I feel really good about it. So a little background on this game. This game came from... I was inspired by this game from two things that happened. And I like to talk about these things, kind of like what makes me think mm-hmm. of game ideas. Sure. Because I think it's kind of fun, and I'm always interested to hear that from other people. Mm-hmm. So what happened with me was... I told you guys a story before when I was on the way to Unpub, and I was talking to Jason and Andy about what if you had a game where you held the cards facing outward, and then Andy was like, yeah, and you could do this and this, and I was like, yeah, and he's like, dude, that's Hanabi. You're an idiot. And then they kept saying, hey, remember when you won the Spiel des Jahres?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, so that played into it. And then Katarsky, when we were going there, he's a big punk fan. And which, if you listen to the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast, you'll know from the theme song. So
yeah, that's his band, right?
I'm not sure if it is or not.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it wouldn't be. It seems like it probably is. I know that if I was in a punk band and I wanted a punk band to do the theme, I would use my own punk band.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So anyways, he was like, man, I haven't listened to Rancid in a long time. So he downloaded Rancid and Out Come the Wolves, and we listened to the album like twice through.
Such a good album.
It's so good. And there's a song called Junkie Man, and in that like they like talk at one point, and one of the things they say, like, they talk about a field and they say, and out come the wolves, and that stuck with me.
Junkie so, Man, tell me what the story
yeah,
is.
That's yeah. the one. And so the name of this game is And Out Come the Wolves. But it's not about punk rock.
What?
Yeah, sorry. Okay, so here's how this game works. You are a homesteader in Alaska. It's a card game, cards only. Right now it's 144 cards, way more than I like, but I'm having trouble cutting it down. Hopefully after a few play tests, I'll be able to cut 20, 30 cards out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
By 20, 30, I mean 18 or 36. So... anyways, here's how the game works. You are homesteaders in Alaska. There are 2 to 4 homesteaders in Alaska, and you are trying to build up your homestead to survive. The problem is there's this huge pack of wolves that's terrorizing you every night, eating your livestock, wrecking your stuff. Like, there's hundreds of them, right? Big problem. So what you do is there for the components wise, it's just cards. There is a deck of 68 day cards, a deck of 48 night cards, and then like a deck of 30-ish buildings. You at the beginning are dealt a hand of day cards, and what's going to happen is you're going to hold those day cards Hanabi style, so facing away from you, right? And then all the players at their homestead are allowed during the day to look in the woods for resources. Basically, like, they're out in their field and they're out in the woods looking for resources. So the player to their left represents the woods closest to them, right? Mm-hmm. And that works for each player right in the circle. So drafting style, what we would do is I would say I would look at the resources and I can see what they are because they're facing me.
Mm-hmm.
The person doesn't know, but everybody else knows, right? I look at the one I want, take it, put it face down in front of me. Everybody goes around. Rinse, repeat as many times as you want. The catch is, every time you take one, your opponent will draw a card from the night deck. They take that card, they put it in their hand facing them. Okay? So you mm-hmm. now can't see it. They're not allowed to tell you what the card is, but they are allowed to table talk to you about how bad it might be or might not be. But they're encouraged to bluff about that, right?
Okay.
So you could take all 5 cards if you wanted. You have to do it one at a time. So each person, you know, so it's going around. Once everybody feels like they've taken enough, it becomes dusk. And at dusk, you take out all your resources that you've just taken, and some of them will be things like pigs and cows and chickens or caribou meat or salmon, but primarily it's or bullets or arrows, but it's, a lot of it is logs, right? And use those logs to build various things. So the building cards are kind of set out in stacks, almost like a deck builder would be.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Each one of them has a cost. You start with a lean-to. You start with a lean-to on your property. And from that lean-to, you can upgrade that lean-to to be a shack, right? So I would take three logs I would have to spend. And the cards that I get, like, have anywhere between three to six logs on them, right?
Oh, okay.
The resource cards.
Sure.
But when you spend a card, you spend it all. So if there's something with three and all I have is one card with six logs on it, I'm going to have to spend it all to get it. Make sense?
Sure.
And then there's a scarcity of resources because there's only three shacks in a four-player game, which means that only three people can upgrade to a shack. But then after that is the cabin, and whenever you upgrade, you have to trade in the last thing you had. So if three people get to a shack, and I'm still the lean-to, until someone upgrades to a cabin, which is the next level, I can't upgrade. Does that
you
make
sense? You can't jump stages? You can't jump from lean-to to cabin?
If in one turn you had enough, you could buy the cabin,
okay,
then just trade it back out again, right? Each of those things are going to be worth points at the end of the game.
Okay.
But each of them also allow you to defend against wolves, right? Or ignore, as it says in the rules. You can also get bullets. Bullets laid down in front of you, and arrows, which also lay down in front of you. So here's what happens. Now, you've built up your stuff. You spend as many resources as you want. The other resources you have go in a stack face up in front of you. And then it becomes night. And when nighttime happens, the idea of, and out come the wolves. So then you take your hand and you flip it around. And now everybody can see all the wolves that have been, like, have found you, right? So in the night deck, it's mostly wolves, but some cards have one wolf on them. Some have four. So you don't know. Like, you can have four cards and have four wolves. Or you can have four cards and have 12 wolves.
So you don't know what wolf is about to attack. How many wolves?
No, yeah, you don't know until it happens.
So I drew the night card deck, and those wolves pointed away from me?
Correct.
Oh, I thought they pointed inward.
They point, you're not drawing it. So, okay. So I'm player one, you're player two in a two-player game.
Yeah.
I draft a resource from your hand.
So I'm holding a hand of resource cards, and they're facing all me. Facing you. Yep. All I see are card backs. Okay. All right. So you take one.
Yep.
And then I have to draw a knight card.
And you face it towards you.
And I face towards me.
So okay. All I know is how many knight cards you have. I don't know what's on them. And so you can
Now I have four resource cards and one knight card. And the four resource cards, I don't know what they are, but I know I have a wolf or four wolves on this one card. Okay. And then on the dusk cycle, and then I do the same thing. I take resource from you. And those cards that I take are on the table.
And we go back and forth.
Go back and forth.
And you know, you can say like, should I take another one? And you're like, oh, I don't know, man. You've got a lot of wolves over here.
Oh, so the wolves that I'm drawing into my hand are going to attack you.
Yes.
Okay, I'm with you now.
Does that make sense?
Got it.
So, okay, so you got that now. So let's go back to a four-player game.
Are any of the night cards not wolves?
Yes, there's the full moon, which makes it so that you can't ignore wolves in a full moon. There's a new moon, which means that you can ignore every wolf if you want to. There's penalties for ignoring the wolves, so we'll get to that.
Okay.
And then there's the new moon is... I don't remember what the new moon does. Something semi-beneficial. And then there's the thunderstorm, which says you can ignore all wolves. Because basically, it's easy to hide from wolves in a thunderstorm.
Okay.
Because they can't really track you and things are loud.
Okay.
So now it's night. So now I'm player two. You're player one. No, I'm sorry. I'm player one. You're player two. So I'm whatever. You're the player to the left of me. So now I see how many wolves you have. So you're going to take them out of your hand and you're going to lay them down in front of me. Okay?
Sure.
There's six wolves, say. I have the ability to hide from two of them because of my shack that I've built. So that says I may ignore two wolves. Maybe I've also built an animal pen, which says I can ignore two more wolves. So now I can ignore four wolves, and then I have my bullets, right?
Okay.
All right. So I look at the cards, and I think, what am I going to do here? Well, if I can ignore four wolves, and there's five, say. Let's go with five. I could kill one of them, right? So that's what my bullets are for. So my bullets are sitting there, and it's just one card that says bullets on it. And if I want to kill a wolf, I tap it to the right. I kill another wolf, tap it again. Kill another wolf, tap it one more time. That fourth wolf that I would kill, it turns face back up again. And then I throw it away because those were my bullets.
Because you're out of bullets.
Yep. So it's an easy way to track multiple bullets. Mm-hmm. So still follow me?
Yep.
All right. So let's say that one wolf is going to get by. So one wolf I can't ignore. Well, one wolf I can't ignore. I killed one. I hid from three. There's one wolf that I have no way to ignore it because I've reached my ignore limit. Does mm-hmm. that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that wolf is going to break something on my property of my choice. Anything I want. It can be a resource. So for every wolf card left over, one thing's going to get destroyed. And I'm going to have to throw it away. It doesn't matter what that is. Like I said, I can choose anything. And it doesn't matter if that wolf card has four wolves on it or one. It's one per card. So you kind of have to strategize. Like, all right, there's four wolf cards. Three of them have one wolf on them and one has four. Now, I only have the ability to get rid of three of them. So I'll do it that way. So there's only one card left, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is when you're killing the wolves, you get points for those. When you kill a wolf, you collect it. You put it in your pile and that never goes away. At the end of the game, they're going to be worth points and they're worth a pretty good amount of points. If I don't, any wolf that I don't kill, mm-hmm. that attacks me, and any wolf I ignore moves to the next player. Now, the next player is going to have all the wolves they earned from me, mm-hmm. plus they're going to have all the wolves I just sent to them. So the fourth player is going to get totally boned.
Yeah.
Fourth player, it's going to suck to be them.
Sure is.
Next turn, they're going to be first player.
Okay.
So the idea is that, like, I can screw you over as fourth player, but it's probably going to come back to me. So the other thing is, if you're in that position and you get a bunch of wolves to you and you can kill them all, that's a ton of points you're going to earn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, so say there's four wolves on a card. I have the ability to kill three of them. Doesn't matter. If I can't clear that card, I can't do anything about it.
Okay.
Make sense?
Sure, because one of them's still going to get through.
Right. And if one gets through, then
still going to wreck your crap.
And that card's going to move along. So I'm not going to get any points for that, because the only way I get points is if I can take that card.
Got it.
Okay. So we do that. Then we go to the dawn cycle,
mm-hmm.
which is the first cycle of every round. And at dawn, player shifts over to the next person. So now they're first player. Everybody draws back up to five day cards in their hand. And you can now trade any leftover resources you have out, anything on your property. You're like, I really want that cabin, Jason. All right, let's talk. Maybe you trade me some wolf pelts. Maybe I trade you this. Nothing is off the table. You can trade however you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're homesteaders and you're working together, sure. even though you're kind of all screwing each other.
Right.
So when you really host someone, they might not trade with you, right? Because I wanted kind of that social aspect to the game,
because
mm-hmm. you are like a small community. After that, it's just rinse and repeat. The game ends when the day cards run out, which should always happen before the wolves die. And any wolves that got ignored by the fourth player or got through, they go on the bottom of the wolf of the night deck.
Okay.
Which means that theoretically the strongest wolves by the end is what you're going to be getting constantly.
Yeah.
Because it's, and one more thing, the night cards that are not wolves, those get discarded every time.
Okay.
So it becomes a pure wolf deck eventually to try and scale into the game.
Got it. Okay. All right. So there are four people around this table here.
Mm-hmm.
It's you and me and our wives. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I've got my five resource cards here, right? All right. So you take one of mine, I pick up a knight card.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steph comes and takes one of my resource cards.
No. You can only take from the person on your left.
Only on the person on your left.
So I draft one from you and then I'm next, right? So if I draft one from you and then you're to my left and Steph is to my right, she's going to draft from me.
Okay.
So it's always the person on your left.
Always the person on your left is going to take the card from you.
Does that make sense? And the person on your left is who you're going to send your wolves to. Sorry, the person on your right is who you send your wolves to.
The person who took all your resources is who...
Yep.
Okay.
Basically, you're pressing your own luck, but you're also pressing other people's luck if you're not the fourth player, because you can always choose to send the wolves to them with penalty. I mean, something's going to happen to you, but...
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how that plays. I worry that player one is going to have a mega advantage, and whoever like player three is in the first round is just going to get just horribly obliterated. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even player two on that first round is just going to get totally wrecked. Because when the cards run out, whoever happens to be player four at that time is going to be the worse off.
By the end, it shouldn't matter as much. By the end, player four, by the end, every player should really be able to ignore a lot of the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Because it scales really easily. You don't need very many resources to start buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, everything starts with ignore one wolf. And then starts to build very quickly to ignore this, ignore that. And you also have a lot of things you can sacrifice. You know, you've got these animals that aren't worth very many points. So yeah. They're pretty easy to sacrifice. Or you sacrifice a cheap upgrade.
Okay.
And now you're, you know.
Got it. Yeah, I guess I'm remembering Nightfall and how I just did not enjoy that at all. Because in Nightfall, the first couple of rounds of the game was everybody fight each other. And then the next six rounds were not doing anything at all. And then the last few rounds were everybody fight each other again. And then it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry about that structure not being all that compelling.
And also, to be helpful, everyone starts the game with a lean-to, which uh-huh. allows you to ignore one wolf.
Okay.
And bullets. One thing of bullets. So on turn one, you could theoretically ignore one wolf and kill four.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I'm hoping that the trading, the social mechanic with it,
mm-hmm.
makes you have to think about whether or not you really want to hose other people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very interested to see how that works out. Obviously I have some concerns about the balancing of it.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to see it be played to figure out, you know. I know we're going to do a playtest. It may just be with two of us. It'd be great if we could get a third person in on that because the dynamic works a little different then. But in a two-player game, you even more don't want to hose the second player because they're going to hose you right back the next turn.
So in that two-player game, so basically in any round, I could choose to not take any resources from anyone.
Well, from the always the person on your left.
Yeah, well, okay, not take any resources from the person. And then I'm fat and happy.
Because
I got my lean-to and I got my bullets and I'm good.
If you're first player, sure. But you're getting more points by killing wolves. And if you don't take anything, there's no wolves to kill.
So the only way to get points is to kill wolves.
You also get points from building, but the only way to build stuff is to take cards,
okay,
which is going to draw wolves.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Okay.
So it's pretty tight together.
Mm-hmm.
To build things, you have to get cards. To get wolves, you also are taking cards. So, I mean, one should beget the other is the idea.
Yeah. All right.
So we'll see. I mean, yeah. I really love the social aspect of I can see what's going to happen to you and I can choose to use that how I want to.
Yeah.
I can be nice about it. I can be like, mm-hmm. hey, man, this is honestly, you probably should stop. Or I can be like, go for it, man. You'll be good. Don't worry. You got this. It's going to be a piece of cake.
Mm-hmm.
And then we turn them around and you've got like 15 wolves bearing down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And the wolves, they're primarily one wolf. Then there's some twos. There's a few less threes, even less fours. And then there's three alpha wolves.
Mm.
Alpha wolf cannot be ignored, and you have to kill him as if you were killing three wolves.
Mm.
There's only three of those in the deck. They're worth a crap ton of points. And the big thing is you can't ignore them. So mm-hmm. like they will damage you. They will break some of your stuff.
Okay.
So.
Well, cool. Yeah. Let's give it a shot, man.
So
let's try it.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm excited about it because, there's just a lot of things about it that I like and I feel like are going to work pretty well, but I mean, so many times, you know, you feel like you're good with a proto and then you try and it
all falls apart.
You know, in this case, I've written a lot of the rules and mm-hmm. I had the rules written before I made the proto. It wasn't just kind of like, sometimes you make a proto and it's kind of amalgamous mm-hmm. in your head and you've got like this, oh, I've got, you know, these few rules in my head and I've got these card ideas. Let's make a proto. And then it's terrible.
Yeah.
In this case, I feel a little better about it, but who knows?
Sure.
It could be terrible. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. Right on.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, we are almost out of time here.
So let's,
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast.